Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
One of the most remarkable aspects of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is its unique history. Throughout the world, great stories from faithful church members have only added to that history. This program shares some of these incredible stories of faith, perseverance, hope, and inspiration. You're listening to Legacy. I'm your host, Nathan Wright. You're listening to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Camping and survival skills, cooking, sleeping bags, testimony meetings, and singing around the campfire. One of the highlights of many girls in the church is the young women camping experience. Today, we're going to learn from the experts how camp became a traditional part of the Young Women Organization. The experts joining me today are all members of the Young Women History Committee and include Brittany Chapman from the Church History Department, Jan Pinborough, Managing Editor of the Friend Magazine, Kathleen Peterson, past member of the Young Women General Board, and Christine Van Wagenen, Julie Bagley, and Carol McConkie, currently serving on the Young Women General Board. I'd love to hear about the original purpose of Young Women Camp and why there appears to be so much interest in its history. Who can answer that for me?
I'll answer that.
Thanks, Julie.
We're interested in the history of camp today because of the great impact it has had on the lives of countless young women through the years. It's a special place where lives are changed and testimonies are built and strengthened. Friendships are fostered, skills are taught and learned, and an appreciation for God's creations are enhanced. And it's also a beautiful place where young women more fully come into Christ. In discussing how the Young Women Camp has become a traditional part of the Young Women Organization today, it's interesting to look back and see how it all began. The first Young Women Camp dates to the summer of 1912. So this coming summer, 2012, it will be 100 years of Young Women Camp in the church. So just think of that, a century of girls' camp. And it did all begin in the Liberty Stake, which is located in Salt Lake City, Utah. The mutual program on a general church level at the time followed the 9 months of the school year, but during the 3 summer months, the mutual activities were held on a local level. So the young women leaders in the Liberty Stake were looking for inspired ways to help their young women and to bless their lives during these summer months. And out of this desire, the idea of a summer camp for girls was born. And this small little grassroots activity was very successful. So the general board of the young ladies, MIA, were pleased with what they saw being done in the Liberty Stake, and they had a desire for to study the possibility of a summer camp program for the young women in the entire church. So they appointed a committee to explore this possibility, and as evidenced around the world today, successful camps are being held from anywhere from Salt Lake City to Singapore, from Arizona to Asia, from Nebraska to Nicaragua. Young Women Camp is now worldwide, and it is continuing to bless the lives of our young women everywhere.
The original objectives of camp have actually evolved over the years. As was mentioned earlier, it was to broaden the 9-month program into a year program to help maintain friendships or to strengthen friendships and build unity within the girls and to provide an opportunity for them to learn about nature and also to learn some skills, if you will. I recently visited with a sister who attended camp in the 1930s, actually at the Mutual Dell Camp up American Fork Canyon in American Fork, Utah. Her name was Sister Helen Hendrick Wells, and as we visited, the years melted away. She is in her 80s now, and yet she seemed like she was 15 again as she started to talk about her camp experiences. She said that back in the day, that they didn't have any special equipment or any special clothing. They just kind of showed up for a week's vacation. And there was a house that was built there there, and they slept in a large room with all the girls sleeping in double beds, actually. And they had no responsibility as far as cooking. They brought a staff up to cook for them and had some, I would think, little chores to do. But other than that, they were there to play games. They played a lot of board games in the big house that was built, and they went out on short little walks and had just a grand time. One of her favorite things was every night they had a big bonfire and a testimony meeting. And she said that it was wonderful to be able to gather around the campfire. That's usually in the evening. The priesthood leaders would come up the canyon and be with them. And she doesn't remember a whole lot about what was said, but she does remember that if you didn't have time to say your testimony one night, that you had several other nights that you would have that opportunity. As I visited with her, I could tell that camp really had an impact on her life. She showed me a picture of she and seven of her friends, and she still remembers them. She remembers what they did together, and she also remembers what they've been doing for the rest of their lives. And so I was very pleased to be able to visit with her and recognize that someone who has been to camp so many years ago still remembers the impact that it had on her life.
Today, we hope the camp will help young women become more aware of God's creations and the blessings the gospel brings into our lives. They can find joy in an outdoor setting that will strengthen their love for each other and the gospel and their commitment to stand together as witnesses at all times and in all things and in all places.
So, as Julie mentioned, we're getting close, evidently, to the centennial of that first girls' camp. Do we have any records of what took place at that camp? Have any fun or what happened? Do we have any idea?
Yeah, we do. And I'll just start telling you a bit about how it began. They definitely had a lot of fun. So our first record that we have of mentioning girls' camp in the Salt Lake Stake Minutes is March 12th, 1912. And it's just very brief. It's just one sentence where it says, President Emily H. Higgs spoke of a summer camp for the girls. And Emily Higgs was kind of the mastermind behind the first girls' camp. And she introduced the idea, helped it to go forward. It was kind of built upon the informal summer activities that were already being done. Like Julie and Christine mentioned, the young women had 3 months where they didn't have any formal mutual night meetings like they did during the school year. And the young women leaders were concerned that the girls were not using all of that extra time in a structured way to help them continue to progress through the summer. And they did have informal activities occasionally. Like one ward started a sewing circle every other Thursday, and they would read to each other, things like that. So they would have small activities like that, but nothing really consistent. The general board suggested that summer activities, quote, be of a different nature so that the girls might be held and that spiritual uplift might continue throughout the year, unquote. They left it up to the wards, and stakes, to decide what they really wanted the young women to do. There wasn't any formal organization. And so building upon that, things of a different nature, they wanted to do more things outside. In those early years of the 20th century, there was a progressive movement going on, and people were concerned about the urbanization that was occurring and that young people were not being out in nature like their parents and grandparents had been.
And this wasn't just the church.
Right.
This was across
exactly.
The country.
Yeah, exactly. And so people in the church were taking off with this idea. And also, the pioneer tradition was so strong, and they were realizing, wow, this upcoming generation is not physically practicing a lot of the skills that their pioneer ancestors had. And so they wanted to change that. And Emily Higgs was a part of that and felt like it was important for the young women to be out of doors. And so the Liberty Stake began planning for a week-long girls' camp. So I'll continue with the activities.
Yes, okay. Tell us what they did.
Okay. So it was really, really fun. And it's almost novel in a way when you read about how they got there and what they did. I find it really charming. It was a group of about 16 girls that initially went to what they called Liberty Glen. Liberty, because it was named after Liberty Steak, I'm guessing. And then Glen, because it was in a beautiful little spot in the woods. It was part of James Godfrey's land in Murray, Utah. And Salt Lake used to be crisscrossed with a whole bunch of streetcars. That's how a lot of people got around. And so they rode the streetcar to Murray and then got off the car at Vine Street in Murray. And then a hay rack was sent to meet them there. And it took all their bedding and bags and anyone who could not walk. And then the leader took the girls and they followed on foot 1 mile east to a road leading south into the glen. And records say that car fare was 10 cents each, and each paid 50 cents for the use of the camp, 25 cents to the Godfreys, and 25 cents for the upkeep of the camp. And we do have a picture of Liberty Glen, the structure that they stayed in. And it's just a little, very basic cabin to protect them from the elements. And they also made a pond in the area, a swimming hole, where they could go and they would spend time there. And along with those pioneer skills that we talked about, that I mentioned earlier, they felt it was important for young women to learn how to cook out of doors. And, of course, also they would need to eat while they were up there. So they planned a week's menu, and they got different advice from people about foods that might be important to prepare and recipes that would be successful and delicious. Girls were assigned certain days that they prepared meals and were able to practice on their immediate families before getting camp dinners. And then because of that practice, they knew what to take and how much to take. So they had their cooking utensils and dishes kept in a large box hung in a tree. And a piano was lent to the stake and was placed in the sleeping room in that small cabin. And they had an old coal stove inside and table and boxes outside. And that was the equipment that they had there. So from this beginning, the idea just caught on like wildfire amongst other stakes, and led to building more permanent and formal resorts for young women to go to girls' camp.
So like Christine said, it doesn't sound like things have changed that much, actually.
Right.
Not too much. I love how at this camp that Brittany's just described to us, that they were able to, because a creek was there on the property, they were able to dam it up and create a swimming hole for them and to begin to engage in the water activities and bathing and fun things, sunbathing, all of that.
So the camp, having started in Utah, many of the local young women campers will likely think of Brighton Camp, which is a big cottonwood canyon near Salt Lake City here. And it's my understanding that Brighton Camp was also the location of many early pioneer summer celebrations. What do we know about the history of Brighton Camp and how it came to be?
I'll talk about that. I love the history of Brighton Camp. As a young woman, I attended Brighton Camp for 5 of my 6 young women years. And when I got a few years older, I was a counselor there for one summer. So I love to talk about the history of camp. In the history of the LDS Church's young women organization, Brighton Camp holds significant memories because it was the first summer home built for the purpose of a girls' camp on a general church level. As we previously discussed, the general board of the Young Ladies MIA desired to have a summer camp program for girls of the entire church. And so because they were pleased with what they had seen Emily Higgs do that summer, in March of 1918, they appointed a committee to study this possibility. So This group that they appointed went on a search for the perfect spot for a summer home or a girls' camp for, to begin with, the Salt Lake girls. And so they took field trips up various canyons that were near Salt Lake City to try to find the perfect spot. With a dream in their hearts, the committee members scrambled over the rough terrain of Brighton, and they finally found that sunny, flower-filled, pine-fringed dell overlooking the valley below and recognized immediately and that it was the right place. And so they echoed Brigham Young's earlier declaration that this is the place. This is the place for girls camp. So in June of 1919, the General Board called the stake presidents of the Young Ladies MIA, and they were the four of the original Salt Lake City stakes, Liberty, Pioneer, Ensign, and Salt Lake. And they turned this infant project over to those stakes. In 1920, they began construction on this home, and it was a huge assignment, as you can imagine, because every single nail, every board, every person that was performing labor on this huge log summer camp home presented a transportation problem because it was an unbelievably long, pole, rough, steep terrain they had to wind their way up over. And on top of that, it all had to be paid for. And so what they did back then is they had a church-wide magazine sales campaign, and all the commissions went to the building fund, and they had fundraising dances and carnivals, and programs were held. And today we think of bridal showers or baby showers. Back then, they had showers given in the wards to furnish the homes. They had kitchen showers and bedroom showers and bathroom showers so that they could furnish this beautiful Brighton home. And by 1921, it was almost complete. So they sent up the first group of young women, just one small group. And one young woman, Mary Teerlink, kept a journal of her experience at Brighton and the activities that they did while they were up there. And it's very interesting because they would meet. They met on 6th South and 4th West in Salt Lake City. But she said it was quite a job to carry all of their food and their clothing and everything they needed to this appointed place because very few of them had cars. And she said, we certainly had no cars to get our things there. But when they got to this spot, the city trucks were commissioned to drive them up. And so she elaborates on the beautiful drive up, even though it was rough. They got there at noon, and she said, what a beautiful place to see all the beautiful pines and the flowers and the mountains. It was just wonderful. And then she said, we came into the view of the girls' home. Oh, how beautiful, so huge, all made of new logs. What a commanding sight it was. And then she said, we were told that we could set up camp inside the home, but we would need to cook all of our meals outside. And she said the week went fine. They did cooking and hiking, just having a good time. And she said we were pretty much on our own to do as we wanted. There were some rules as getting together in the morning first thing and then again at night to have prayer and make sure all girls were accounted for and everything was all right. So certainly the guidelines and rules over the years have evolved quite a bit. But August 18th, 1922 was the opening celebration, and President Heber J. Grant attended and expressed his satisfaction for the great work and the fine building of the girls' home in the tops of the mountains for their entertainment and pleasure. And he complimented all the committees on the various splendid work they had done and accomplished. And they had a wonderful program. And they said that it was then that the sweet, gentle spiritual presence of the home, felt by so many girls through all the changing years, first entered the hearts of those assembled there. And in 1923, it was officially opened for a summer full of campers.
Knowing nothing about this amazing old building, does it still stand?
It burnt down in the 1960s, but it has been rebuilt, restored, refurbished, refurnished. It's beautiful.
Excellent. That's good to hear. We're talking about the history of Young Women Camp. Joining the discussion today are Carol McConkie, Julie Bagley, Christine Van Wagenen, Jan Pinborough, Kathleen Peterson, and Brittany Chapman. So according to my notes, since I don't go to Young Women Camp every year, today the camps usually involve outdoor activities, essential preparedness, first aid, certification, etc. What were the purposes and some of the activities of the very first Young Women Camps?
It's so interesting to me to look at what they accomplished in camp and the way that it came about. Camp grew, as has been stated, grew out of a need for summer work for the young women and to keep them interested and worthily engaged during those months from May to September. And the Liberty Stake had set the pattern and established something that was picked up by the central board, but they wanted to provide a structured program for the church so that they could, all the stakes could engage in such a camp. And as we've also mentioned, at the same time, there was this national trend of turning toward outdoor activities for girls. And in the country, we had organizations like Campfire Girls. And in England, there were the Girl Guides. It's interesting to read the introduction of the Young Ladies Mutual Improvement Camp Bulletin of 1930s as it records a little of the sentiments of this time when as camp was being established. It says, "Mankind is rediscovering the out of doors. Due in some measure to science and invention, more and more people are living in cities. Everywhere the work of the world is done under the pressure of speed and to the accompaniment of noise. More leisure time is a possibility for everyone. When man gives his mind to it, he will do away with the noise, learn to work calmly under speed, and perhaps find how wisely to use his leisure. One thing he has found out, there is rest and recreation in nature. Hence the use of the out-of-door camp, which has become a factor in American life." And so the central board of the Young Ladies Mutual Improvement Association approached Dr. Luther Gulick, who had established the Campfire Girls in the country, because they could see how successful his program was. And he was very accommodating to their needs. They have initially tried to determine whether they should join the Campfire Girls, as the church was participating for the boys and Boy Scouts. But after examining the program, they decided they needed more autonomy than that. And they also wanted to provide a spiritual component to their program. And so they decided that they would establish their own program with its own unique activities and with their own system of honors and awards. So in 1915, this program was established, and I just have to read the announcement that came out in March of 1915 from the central board. "After a careful consideration of the reports made by the various stakes, it has been decided by the General Board of the Young Ladies Mutual Improvement Association to offer a uniform plan of summer work for all stakes. It will be new in name, at least, but it will contain the most successful features of our summer work of the past few years. The plan is similar to the campfire work tried out in our association last summer, which would have been the summer of 1914. And it aims to induce members to put into practice that which we have been teaching for many years past. The members are to be organized into groups called Beehive Girls." So it was 1915 that this name was applied to this summer program. Well, as it turned out, Beehive Girls was not going to satisfy only the summer months, and it quickly became a year-long program. And in the meantime, summer camp took a life of its own, and it supported the Beehive Girls and gave them opportunity to fulfill requirements for their out-of-door field of work, but it continued on independently as well from Beehives. And also from the camp bulletin of the 1930s, we get a sense of the purpose of this camp. It says, "The Committee for Camp on the Young Lady Central Board referred to the ideals and activities suggested in a wide variety of manuals to put on a successful camp." This is as they were examining the other organizations for suggestions for activities. And they gleaned much from these. But for themselves, and this is the key to the camp program and the essential purpose that continues today, says, for themselves, they desire to keep the inspiration of the Spirit of God, which they sincerely acknowledge has been theirs, and to work to bring into closer touch with His peace and beauty and friendliness. The objective being that we would help young women have the opportunity to separate themselves from worldliness and things of the world, and to come to nature, set aside their concerns and their cares, and really appreciate the creations of Heavenly Father and feel the Spirit and learn to grow in unity and love one for another and to serve one another as they participate in camp. We could talk for an hour about the history of beehives, and it is a radio program all in itself, so we won't talk more about that today. But to continue with summer camp, the summer camp just grew overnight in success. Stakes in Utah, Arizona, and Idaho established camps, and they also called them summer homes, like the Brighton Summer Home. By 1927, 4,500 young women had attended or vacationed at various summer homes or camps. Many camps had been established, and many more were yet to be established. In this 1930s Young Ladies Mutual Improvement Camp Bulletin, the organization of camp and the purpose of camp, budgets for camp, activities for camp, and suggestions for daily schedules were outlined so that leaders would have something to follow. You can see that the camp is becoming more and more programmed, and the purposes are becoming more and more clear. In that outline, it also says that the youth must be trained in the use of leisure. Camps play a most important part in accomplishing this purpose. It also, the bulletin also quotes Harriet Gulick, who is the wife of Dr. Luther Gulick. She writes, camps have great opportunities to develop our young people, in our young people, some joy-giving hobbies, some keen delights that may grow in value through a lifetime. She suggests activities of fishing, hiking, water sports, nature explorations, or hobbies in trees, flowers, birds, stars, rocks, and geological formations. All of this is to help develop health and add to enlarge capacities and to safely enjoy leisure time. Also, according to the bulletin, camp should provide a high level of physical vitality, opportunity for developing good citizenship, and give vital contact with real people. Isn't that interesting? As we live in today's virtual world, that they were concerned about giving young women vital contact with real people. And also, they were to have well-planned activities in outdoor experiences and maintain a spirit of reverence. So, for instance, a daily schedule might begin at 7 o'clock for Reveille, 7:15, the dip in the pool, or not pool, excuse me, lake, shower, or informal exercise, which they call jerks. I really don't know what that means. 7:50 would be the flag-raising ceremony with announcements. 8 o'clock might be breakfast. 8:45 to 9:15, camp capers, which I think still exists. I know it does. And then followed by inspection. At 10 o'clock, there might be the morning song activity or games or a swimming period followed by free time. At 12 noon would be dinner, followed by a rest hour, quiet reading, letter writing. After that, another quiet hour for sunbathing. 2:30 activity might include handicrafts. 5 o'clock free time. 6 o'clock supper time. 7:30 to 8:30 might be an evening program, which would include dramatics or musicals, speakers, storytelling, or testimonies. 9:30 lights out. Sounds like a fun, relaxing day. As I looked at that schedule, I thought, well, I went to summer girls' camp last summer, and I participated also in water sports, canoeing, and so forth, stargazing. But in addition to that, now we've added rock climbing and rappelling and some of the other first aid and camp certification activities. So it has grown in scope, but is definitely still the purpose of giving these young women an opportunity to participate in activities where they develop unity and where they make connections with gospel principles, and where they have a chance to be away and to feel the Spirit of the Lord in nature's setting.
Thank you. Something that's been mentioned a few times in passing, but that we need to get to at this point, is a very notable part of girls' camp, which is cooking. People have to eat, as Brittany said. What do we know about food preparation, the menus, and cooking at camp? At the Bryden House, they had to do it outside so they didn't burn the place down, evidently.
With a lot of activities that we participate in, it is about the food. People come for the food. And it is amazing how food that is partaken of out of doors always tastes better, no matter what the menu might be. As was mentioned earlier, how when camp began, girls were encouraged to practice their menus before they even went up to camp, so that when they, by the time they were there, they knew exactly what to take as far as ingredients. They knew what the menu was going to be, and that they had developed those skills so that preparation came fairly easy, and that the food always turned out well.
I can tell you from experience, the Boy Scouts do not do that.
I have 4 Eagle Scouts at my house, and that is probably true. They come home very hungry. But often when we talk to young women about their experience at camp, they really gravitate to that bonfire experience when they're around the fire and having a testimony meeting. And that provides warmth to their body and also to their soul. And as I've been studying some recent and past camp manuals, building of fires has been consistent all the way through. And it's not just for the bonfire experience, but more importantly, to teach them how to prepare foods in several different ways, using different types of fires. And so fire building has become a big part of the camp experience. And as even in the most current manual, there are several ways that you need to learn how to build a fire, because there are different fires are used to cook in different methods. So it's for skill building. There's also been a wide range of types of food, depending on where the camp is held, of course. And if they are at an organized camp like Bryden, then the facility is there. People cook for them. They have the kitchen capers, I think is what we called it back in the day, but they would help. But then perhaps a girls might go backpacking, where they would have to take all of their food with them, and they would just be out in the wild, and so they would need to know how to build those fires and how to cook those foods properly. And so it really didn't matter about what type of camp, but food has always been very important. Menus are designed, I guess, around those things that are readily available and to their liking. As I visited with a friend whose daughters, 3 of her daughters, attended Young Women Camp actually in the state of Illinois, and she said that the skills that those girls learned at girls' camp provided fabulous meals on their family's backpacking trip. And she was grateful for that experience for them. I was reading in a book not too long ago that was written in 1947, entitled Cooking Out of Doors. And it suggested that cooking out of doors should be one of the most important things, or the part that should play an important role in the camp experience. And I quote from that, and the author said, "For good food and plenty of it gives a greater boost to camp morale than most any other feature of camp." I think we would all agree with that. It's all about the food. They went on to say that that the young women would gain confidence as they practice their skills, and it would prepare them for their future roles as wives and mothers, which we always think of cooking as just kind of something that we do at home in the kitchen. But there's circumstances when we need to have those skills and feel very confident in them. And so it's a good thing for them to learn those cooking skills and preparing for their future roles. Also, I think that boosts their confidence tremendously. And also in this book, which was, as I mentioned, Cooking Out of Doors, was a supplement to a book called Camparama, which was the kind of the manual for camp for many, many years. But they also said that the thing that is most important is to have whatever is prepared done successfully so that it tastes like s'more. Leaders were advised to help the young women to do a great job with even the simplest kind of cookery. And once again, I quote from this book. Even the humble Frankfurter, currently known as the hot dog, can be cooked with an artist's hand, browned and well done in place of the usual burnt on the outside and raw on the inside variety. So we know that camping can be quite fun, and learning to cook in the great outdoors provides skills and opportunities and good food.
Is it too early for supper? It sounds really good. We're talking today about the history of young women camp.
You said you were hungry. Maybe it was time for dinner. And I have brought something to share with all of us today.
Oh, let's take a look at that. What do you have?
And it's about s'more. So this looks like a little more gourmet-ish than a regular s'more.
Unbelievable.
But these are s'mores in a jar.
Oh.
Wow.
As we talk about the different types of cooking, one of my favorites is using a solar oven. A solar oven, you can bake bake a chicken. You can bake s'mores. You can bake a cake. You can bake bread. And so these are s'mores that were cooked for you, not in a traditional way, but kind of in a fun way. So I hope that you will enjoy that. All it is simple ingredients. You've got your graham crackers and your chocolate and your marshmallows, and you've got a really yummy s'more. I've included 2 spoons for you in case you want to share a bite with someone else.
Well, thank you. A fun little ball canning jar with the graham crackers on the bottom, chocolate in the middle, and marshmallows on the top.
Now, that is a chocolate cake that is the filling. But you could use a regular chocolate cake. You could use a mix if you wanted to. You could use a brownie recipe that you really like. You can include nuts, which I did not do today. But you could use just about anything. Just like a regular s'more, there's no way to do it that's quote-unquote right. It just has to be yummy and gooey and rich. So I hope you enjoy.
Thank you very much, Christine. So who can share with me some experiences from other parts of the world, young women camps not in the Rocky Mountain West? Jan, you're nodding your head there.
Yes. Recently, we have been gathering not only experiences but also photographs from young women's camp all over the world. We've heard stories about young women who learned to make camp furniture out of bamboo in the Brazilian jungle, and we've heard stories about young women who slept in dormitories in bunk beds by a river in the Swiss Alps. So there is quite a range of different kinds of camp experiences. In Côte d'Ivoire, Africa, young women camp on the beach surrounded by a beautiful lagoon, and they tied knots. They learned to find north using the position of the sun, and they taught each other first aid. But even though their camping area is just 30 minutes from the capital city of Abidjan, where they live, for many it was the first time they had ever been to the beach. So most of them spend the majority of their time in school, if they're lucky enough that their parents can afford it, or working to help with the family income. So learning to swim was a new and very exciting experience for those young women. Like several of the girls, Micheline expected camp to be a very special experience, so she wore her Sunday dress to camp. Wearing a wraparound skirt or dress for every occasion is not uncommon there. But when it came time to light a fire, she had to be very careful not to smudge or burn her dress. So there are just a lot of wonderful, touching, diverse experiences that have come to us through these young women who have been sending us experiences. And I've been struck by how many of them focus on the meaningful, sometimes even life-changing experience that camp can be for young women the world over. Several years ago, a group of young women from Nicaragua traveled as many as 20 hours by bus to take part in young women camp. They learned camping skills, they cooked, they prayed, they sang together. But most of all, they described that they loved being identified as a group of young women who share the same beliefs and the same goals and struggles and strivings. And when they loaded the bus for the long trip home, they took more than new camping skills. They took strengthened faith and friendships. One 14-year-old girl said, "I had a big thrill in my heart being at camp. There I learned to share and make friends. I want to be a woman of courage." Another young woman named Adelis wrote, "I like to think that many of those young women are my sisters, all loved spirit daughters of our Father, and that at camp we had the chance to cry with one voice, 'We are daughters of a Heavenly Father who loves us, and we love Him.'" She continues, "I still remember the happy times at camp, and I think about things so small and simple as wearing the bracelets that represented each of the young women's values as a symbol of our commitment to remain chaste and to achieve our great goal of the temple. It has helped me remember every moment who I am and what my divine nature is." And then we had a report from a young woman from France, and she was had just returned from her first year at camp, which was in Lausanne, Switzerland. And she wrote this, "Camp encouraged me to read the scriptures more often, and I was as close to the other girls as I was to the leaders. Today, those girls are not just people who are in the same class as me, but they are friends. Now, going to young women is a moment of pure happiness." So we know that these camp experiences do linger with these girls, and they have a deep spiritual component to them, and the girls hold these experiences close to their hearts and carry with them the things that they learned at camp.
Thanks, Jen. It's remarkable to me that camp seems to be successful in most any circumstance, and I think that's evidence of the genius and inspiration behind, I think, its beginning. Clearly, more important than location or circumstance, the purposes of camp are most important. Perhaps each of you could share something you feel makes camp memorable and meaningful in the lives of young women. Who would like to start?
As I was reflecting on camp, it caused me to think about my own camp experience and why it was meaningful to me and what things I learned. And I decided to go back to my journal from that time period and see what I wrote about camp at the time. This entry was written when I was about 16 years old, and this was reflecting on camp after I had gotten home. It said, "Girls' camp was so great. What a fun experience. So spiritual, too. Tonight we had our testimony meeting. There was such an amazing spirit there, stronger than I remember from past years. I went up to bear my testimony. Right before me were these two girls, best friends. One was a non-member. She said camp was an awesome experience for her, and she loved the church. She stayed up for 3 hours last night reading the scriptures and absolutely loved it. She said she wants to be baptized. It was the most amazing thing to hear that. The spirit still burns when I remember it. It was the neatest thing I've ever witnessed." And I think camp provides a unique environment to help young women grow both in their own testimonies and to experience a feeling of unity with other young women, and definitely have wonderful memories.
Thanks, Brittany.
Well, just to echo what Brittany said, I do think it is, for me, the spiritual component that makes camp a really unique and wonderful part of the young women program. And I think sometimes that we experience things more deeply when we're in nature and surrounded by one another. One of those Nicaraguan young women wrote this. She said, "Now I feel that my testimony is stronger, and I ask God to give me the opportunity to be sealed in the temple." For a young woman to come to that feeling that her faith is strengthened and to set a lifelong goal like that is a really unique thing that might not be accomplished in any other way, that can come about in just those few days at camp.
Thanks, Jen.
For me, both as a young woman and a young woman camp leader through many years, I experienced for myself and came to realize that it is at camp that testimonies are built and strengthened. And it's oftentimes at camp that a young woman will feel the Spirit for the very first time in her life. It's at camp that some of these precious young women share their testimony out loud for the first time in their lives. It's oftentimes at camp that they come to know their Heavenly Father's great love for them. It's at camp, at least for me, that my heart was changed forever. I remember one of my past stake presidents sharing with me that whenever he interviewed young single adult girls who are being in his office to be interviewed to leave for a mission or they're having a temple marriage interview, that he would always ask them to share with them their testimony, and he would also ask them where and when their testimony began. And he told me that without exception, 100% of the time, they all answered him that it had begun at Young Women's Camp. And so I second that. I think it's a powerful setting out in nature, in God's creations, where testimonies can be built and strengthened.
I think along with building individual testimonies, camp provides an opportunity for young women to feel unified. Even when you're in a crowd of people, you can feel very isolated and alone, and it can be very difficult to live the standards if you feel that you are alone. And camp provides opportunity for the city life to get out of their minds and out of the girl. It's been said that it takes 5 days to get the city out of the girl. And when she is at camp, the world kind of disappears, and it's all focused on what's happening at camp. And so all those things that we do, they do together, and they form these friendships. And it is a sense of unity that I think is probably one of the greatest things that happens from the camp experience. Feeling connected to others, building those friendships and nurturing those friendships, recognizing that we are all in this together, as I mentioned recently. And as we unite as sisters in Zion, great things will happen. I feel that the camp experience, the whole experience, brings us closer together, that we as individuals no longer feel alone, but that we are truly daughters of Heavenly Father.
Thanks, Christine.
I remember when my daughter and my husband and I entered the mission field in California, and we arrived on a Friday, and Young Women Camp started for my 13-year-old daughter Saturday. And she didn't know anyone. She didn't know the leaders. She'd never been to the place. And it was, although not her first experience with camp, it was definitely a unique and rather lonely experience to quickly scramble and pull out her camping gear and clothes out of the suitcase and throw them in another bag and roll up a sleeping bag and head off to camp, not knowing anyone and feeling quite alone. And how remarkable it was to me to listen to her. She called home. It was on a Saturday, so the camp went from Saturday to Saturday. And she called home on Wednesday and said that she had made friends, that she had felt included, that she was happy. However, if I did want to go pick her up, she'd be happy to come home. But that she was having a good time and that she was okay and just wanted to make sure we were okay. On Saturday, when she arrived home, I saw a new girl. She was felt connected. She felt loved by her leaders in ways that were remarkably close for such a short period of time. I felt a sense of stability from her, that she was prepared now and ready to begin a 3-year mission experience. And it empowered her in a way that was strengthening to us as parents, and she was empowered in her testimony to go and have that kind of an experience where you make friends, feel love, and feel the Spirit of the Lord so profoundly for a full week was literally her training ground for her mission experience. And she came home ready and prepared to go out and talk to people, make new friends, and share her testimony with others. And I attribute this to the experiences that she had in camp. And I also appreciate the sacrifice of leaders, what they go through to put on these camps, to prepare the young women, to get them ready for a sacred experience, and all the work that they do. And to me, it is profound, and it is humbling, and it is testimony building to see the kind of commitment on the part of leaders and the sacrifice that they perform to help these young women come closer to their Father in heaven and to feel the love of their Savior and to feel the Spirit of the Holy Ghost in their lives.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you, one and all. We've been talking about the history of Young Women Camp on Legacy Today. Members of the Young Women History Committee include Brittany Chapman from the Church History Department, Jan Pinborough, Managing Editor of the Friend Magazine, Kathleen Peterson, past member of the Young Women General Board, and Christine Van Wagenen, Julie Bagley, and Carol McConkie, currently serving on the Young Women General Board. And all who were present here today, thank you again. I'm Nathan Wright, and you're listening to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We invite you to listen to new episodes of Legacy Saturdays at 1 o'clock. You can also download any Legacy episode at mormonchannel.org.